I mean, the point to me of let your yes be yes and no be no is that's what makes for good relationships. That's what makes healthy relationships. We're being told that because that's inherently not what we practice. But ultimately to also know if my words don't line up, I can also make a repair. I can always come back and do that. That's being yes too to me.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and today I get to dig deep and gain some wisdom with Dick Matala. Dick has a Master of Science degree in Marriage and Family from Seattle Pacific University, and he has a Master of Divinity degree from Lutheran Brethren Seminary. He's also completed a two-year Marriage and Family Therapy training program. Dick is a licensed marriage and family therapist and an ordained minister. Dick pastored for 30 years, during which he offered spiritual, premarital, marital, and family counseling to the church and community in which he was a part, and he's practiced counseling for over 20 years. Dick is married to an amazing woman and has four wonderful adult children, all of whom adore him and speak highly about his life, character, ministry, and service, which is saying a lot. I hope my kids do the same. Dick, thank you for sharing your time and wisdom on the Week Live podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here today, so looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah. We're in a series on Proverbs, trying to pull wisdom out of God's word and grab hold of it for our lives. And so today I want to engage you on the topic of integrity.
Okay.
And Proverbs 10:9 speaks to this topic, saying, "Whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but whoever takes crooked paths will be found out." How would you define the word integrity?
I would say integrity is about consistency. Mm. It's about, even in that passage in Proverbs, the Hebrew implies that it's about wholeness and completeness. And so it's about how not only it impacts your life, but integrity impacts the community at large as well. So really it encompasses a lot of things that you know, challenges to think how we behave presently, you know, in our lives, to be mindful of what we're doing.
I remember years ago reading a book. I don't know if you've read it by Bill Hybels, called Who You Are When No One's Looking. Have you read that book?
I haven't.
Okay, so
I'm familiar
read
with
that.
Hybels, but I haven't read that book.
Yeah. I was a fairly new Christian. At the time, my whole life was kind of being turned upside down. My values and morals were shifting, and kind of really in a lot of ways, I was being confronted by how I had been living and how I should be living.
Right.
And I remember I was house sitting and I was reading this book, and it challenged me to kind of ask the question, who am I when no one's watching? Am I the same person unseen as I am seen?
Mm-hmm.
Am I the same person on the inside as I display on the outside? Do I behave and believe consistently? Use mm-hmm. the word consistency,
mm-hmm.
regardless of where I am or who I'm with. And so, Dick, I'm just wondering, how often in your line of work do you see people who are a different person when they have an audience and then different when they don't?
That's a good question. In ministry at times, you know, you see people. I mean, sometimes people want to impress you, especially mm-hmm. as a pastor sometimes, because they think you're this special spiritual person, you know. They forget you're still human, you know.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You make mistakes. But, you know, I guess in that place at times I saw people at times who were trying to be something that they were not.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be seen, I guess, by me in a sense, to have somebody at least affirm about who they are and what they were doing in their life. A lot of times, you know, people come to a pastor because they're struggling, or they're, like you even said, there's a difference between who they really are, you know, and what they say they are. So I encounter people now and then like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It seems almost like we need to have a decidedness about who we will be at all times. That kind of this proverb lends to the idea that duplicity makes life really complicated. What are some of the ways in your counseling with people, whether it's in your practice or when you were counseling people as a pastor, where you saw people's duplicity make their life complicated?
I probably see that most with people when they come in for counseling. A lot of times they're kind of afraid. You know, they don't want to be seen. I mean, vulnerability is the ability to let people see your imperfections. Right? You know, it's like if somebody accuses me and says, which I can be, you know, if my wife says to me, you know, you're being defensive. You know, years ago, I would say, no, I'm not. You know, you're just making accusations that aren't true, versus saying, yeah, I do have defensiveness and I am being defensive right now, and that's okay. And so it's being comfortable, you know, really with who you are. So when I see people, I'm trying to get them to accept who they are, not only who God's made them, but, you know, even where their life is in that moment. All right. So I want to know what it is that they don't want other people to see, you know, because can they let other people just see who they are without feeling or fear of rejection or being judged? And, you know, I love Brene Brown in her one book, Braving the Wilderness, because ultimately to step outside, you know, your comfortable little life or box is to be seen for who you are and to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's taken me a long time, and I'm not saying I do it perfectly, but to be able to let people see who I am. So I do that in counseling. I mean, there's different ways in which people practice when they're with people, but I generally try to let them see who I am. Mm-hmm. I remember one guy one day said, you get angry? And I go, yeah. He thought that if you were a counselor, you know, you had figured it all out. And I said, yeah. You know, one of the things to get through anger is getting to a place where you can acknowledge it, mm-hmm. and let people see that at times you struggle with that. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I try to do with people, is try to see who they really are and give them permission to do that so that they don't have to be something they're not.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that duplicity of constantly trying to manufacture who you think you have to be for other people becomes exhausting. Your stories start to not get straight, and your values don't match your actions, and it just gets very, very complicated. This proverb suggests we will be secure if we have integrity. So we can kind of draw a conclusion that we'll feel very insecure without integrity. And there's something to be said about being able to sleep at night, knowing that we've lived an upright, above board life. How do you see people's lack of integrity start to unravel insecurity in their lives?
So I see that most of the time when I work with people, when they come in, if there's conflict, if it's between spouses, mm-hmm. Because as a marriage and family therapist, I do a lot of couples work. And so people come in and they're maybe incongruent with one another, all right? So that there's a sense of they feel like one is attacking them, one's being critical, you know, the other one's being defensive. And so when they come in, we begin to, you know, talk about how that impacts what they're doing, so that the very conflict or the very incongruence that they're living with, the thing they don't really want to look at, kind of from John Gottman, in a sense, I kind of modified it, but in that place that they don't want to go is the very recipe for their happiness and their success, but it's where we don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've ever seen Shark Week, and on Shark Week, they interviewed the guy that films the great white sharks. And when they talked to him, people wanted to know, was there this big metal cage that was going to drop over him when he got in danger? Or were there people out there with these spear guns? And where he said, no, I'm just out there.
Hmm.
He says, it's counterintuitive. And they're like, counterintuitive? And he goes, yeah, it's counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
You swim right towards the shark because everything else in his world swims away. So he doesn't know what to do. So he may bump a camera, but he won't attack you. Mm-hmm. So I use it the same way with people. The sense is that the very thing they are scared of, you know, mm-hmm. they're scared of being seen by their spouse, or they're scared of being seen by a family member or whatever. It's counterintuitive. So I tell them the very thing you don't want to do is the thing that we need to do,
mm-hmm.
right? The antidote to bitterness is forgiveness, right? The antidote to anger is being vulnerable. So I encourage them to see who they are. And if they approach it and go at a different direction and not avoid it,
mm-hmm.
that's how they can become free from the things that are really conflictual in their life or the things that are inconsistent.
Hmm. So in a sense, when you're feeling insecure due to lack of integrity, lean into the very thing you don't want to lean into.
Right,
and deal with it.
Seen.
Go after the shark, man.
Right. The shark is being seen for what you really are, that you're actually insecure.
Hmm.
Leaning into the shark is the fact that you have anger. And you're defensive. And again, insecure in a sense too. You don't want people to see who you are because they will reject you.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Have you ever had an experience or a circumstance where you had to make a hard call and you chose the side of integrity in a circumstance, and what did it cost you?
I think that when I was pastor of a church for 27 years, and then the congregation voted that they didn't want me to pastor any longer, that place was hard not to become bitter. It was hard not to want to push back.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to ask myself really a question of, how do I want to live this out? You know, how does God want me to live this out? How am I going to address this when maybe I feel like it's unjust or it's not right? So that required, in my mind, is to walk not how I felt, not how maybe my anger or resentment wanted me to do that, but was to walk in a way it was different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the proverb, it's like, it's so tempting to go the crooked path,
mm-hmm.
to get off. I mean, really, the crooked path is getting off the norm. It's getting off the path of what God calls us to. Really? That's what Proverbs is all about. And the reality is that's so difficult and challenging, because you want to be resentful. You know, you want to point the finger at the people and say, you're wrong, because ultimately I hadn't done anything wrong. You know, I hadn't done anything immoral. I had been faithful and pastored that church for 27 years.
Mm.
And a lot of times when we go through difficulties or we go through something that causes us to have to measure our integrity, there's a bar in our life. And a lot of times it's the lowest common denominator. And it keeps us from moving up. It keeps us kind of at this lower place. And so I always want to look at what's the opposite of the crooked path. It is to walk and engage in love, to give people what they don't deserve, which to me is the definition of what faith is, because God has given us what we don't deserve. how well can we do that? You take the Lord's Prayer, you know, forgive those who trespass or against you, you know, and forgive. And so that's the real challenge of living in integrity. But it's also the greatest opportunity we have. I don't know if you, N.T. Wright has a book, After We Believe. I don't know if you've ever read it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great book. His whole premise is that if we're going to live a life of integrity, it's a lot of work. Okay? It takes a lot of practice. I mean, God instills that in us, and it makes it something that we can learn, so it becomes more of a natural process. You know, it takes kind of manual work at first. But what I love about the book is he says that's what heaven's probably going to be like. It's the fulfillment of faith, hope, and love. And he says we have the opportunity right now to live that out and experience a bit of what heaven is like. Because if I don't react to people, if I don't judge people for how they've treated me, that's really what heaven is like. Mm-hmm. Because there isn't the resentment and there isn't the bitterness. And I think that's a really cool way to look at it, because it creates a place for us to live in an environment where, you know, maybe we're not supported. Because mm-hmm. that's a long answer.
No, but I'm just thinking, like, I can't imagine how hard that would be to pour your life out, to sacrifice. I mean, I'm in ministry. Like, mm-hmm. I know what it costs. Right. I know what it takes from our family. Like, yeah. And to do that day in and day out, week in and week out, you know, year in and year out, you gave up your holidays. You gave up mm-hmm. Christmas. You gave, I mean, like, mm-hmm. over and over again. And to feel unjustly wronged and wounded and betrayed, the temptation would be that you want to defend your honor, you want to defend your reputation, you want to do a smear campaign and let everyone know, you know, how you were wronged. To choose to not walk that crooked path that would get ugly really, yeah, really right. fast, yeah. mm-hmm. and to walk a path of integrity that had to have cost you something.
In what way?
Well, you probably at times, I'm imagining, almost had to silence like that need we have in us to want to defend our reputation. You probably right. had to choose humility over pride that wants to shout right. from the mountaintops, I didn't do anything wrong and these guys are jerks. I mean, all the things, it costs us something to walk on the straight path right. instead of the crooked
yeah,
path.
Right, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, there were good and bad days. You know, some days I would reminisce about the decision, the people behind the decision, you know. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I mean, it's a day-by-day process, right? I mean, it's something that it's not static, it's dynamic. You know, your faith has to be a part of something that goes with you in the ups and the downs. You know, it's not just faith when things are going well, it's faith when bottom falls out. So for me, like with people, I mean, I just reminded myself of my place or my position with God. You know, a lot of times I'm just remembering about things where I had failed. And there were decisions as a pastor I had to make to remove people from position as well. And so now I was feeling what they were feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, what was I going to do with that? Mm-hmm. You know, was I going to say, no, I'm the exception. I'm the person that can't go through that. I mean, my pride said ever since I was a teenager, I mean, every job I've had, people always wanted me to stay and work because I work. When I did my clinical internship, I did it at a place and they just had the most difficult cases. I mean, that's what they were paid to do. And when I was done, they said, you know, you're the first person that's ever had all your charts together, right? You have done what no one else here's done before. We would like you to stay. And I said, well, no, I'm going to stay in ministry. So you give them that thought process of that. Didn't these people know that I had never been fired. I had never been asked to leave a position. You know, that was really, really something that I had to talk to. I mean, it was a conversation my pride had with me every day. Mm. I also believe it's how God refined me. I mean, there was a point of I still needed to work through this process of saying, it's okay to be fired. It's okay to be no, because that's not what defines me. What defines me is that we're talking, here's my integrity. It's how I live and I walk with God. That's what defines where I go. I mean, that's what the future is going to be predicated on is that real? Is that something I can still walk and live out when I don't feel that way? I mean, one of the things a guy named Murray Bowen says in Marriage and Family Therapy is separating thought from feeling. And there's a sense for me that that's something that I work really, really hard at. That the opportunities to grow, the opportunities to love are in the firing. That's how I really learned to love. I don't really learn it with people I know and people that support me. I learn to love when I get fired. You get what I'm saying, even kind of metaphorically, because there's the rejection. There's the opportunity to give love. You know, we take biblical love, you know, agape love, you know, a love that loves even when it's rejected. So that is what reminded me. Chesed, the Hebrew word for, you know, is loving kindness. It's faithfulness that never stops. Mm-hmm. And it's really what defines God. You know, whether you look in Genesis or where you go with the people in Genesis and onward as they went through the parting of the sea, you know, you would think, wow, now they're set. They have integrity's been shown to them. They will walk that out. But what happened for the next 40 years, they walked a crooked path. So that's where we really get to know and understand who God is and who we are in ourselves. And it was so, and it sounds weird, but it was, and maybe now as I look back, very refreshing and refining to have to really look at myself and say, does the world define me? I mean, maybe God purposely ended my tenure at the church because there were things that church needed to work on and they weren't going to get it done with me there because I worked all kinds of hours. You know, I remember staring out my office window one day and saying, man, it would just be nice to do something else. Maybe God answered that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say that you learned how to love in the firing. Because when I think about integrity, I think that we have these moments, and we have them every day, where we're tempted to do something that will benefit us and hurt someone else. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you learned how to love in the firing is the same idea as when I think about someone who can't pay their bills, mm-hmm. and they are in a room where they see a stack of cash at their work, and they mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. I could just grab one of those stacks of cash and no one's going to notice. Yeah. I'm just going to grab that to pay my bills real quick. And but that wouldn't be loving to the owner of their company.
Absolutely.
You know, or they learn how to love in that moment when they choose not to mm-hmm. take this stack of cash, or right. like a spouse who has an opportunity at work when someone's flirting with them that's not their spouse.
Correct.
They learn how to love Absolutely. In that moment Absolutely. Where they say, I'm not going to do this right. because I'm going to choose to walk the right path and love my spouse, even though I like this attention or whatever's going on. So it's really interesting that you can look back and see what you learned and the mm-hmm. beauty that came from having to be faced with making the choice and choosing integrity. What are the ways you see us blurring the lines of integrity and justifying it?
Well, kind of what we talked about a little bit. It's, I think, you know, if we could say it's our pride, but I don't deserve this. But the Bible, to me, doesn't really indicate that there's things that in life that were above, you know. I mean, God never says, I'm going to protect you from firings or anything, right? So the things that, to me, that blur our lines are when we only focus on ourselves, when we can't look outside of ourselves. It's kind of like the shark thing I told you. I had to face the firing. The firing said something about me, right? I mean, I didn't want to look at that. I wanted it to be all over on the other side, but it is saying something. What is it telling me? What is it that I need to see in myself and embrace? Because I believe, I don't care if it's firings, you know, good things or whatever, but ultimately, looking at a sense, what does that say to me? What does it indicate about myself? If you can self-reflect, if you can look and see and accept who you are, then you're going to be able to transition out of the places where you're maybe struggling with that and not wanting to see integrity or talk to it. Because it just requires us to step back a little bit. That's what's really, really difficult. It's like James says, you know, you look in the mirror and then you walk away as if I don't recognize that person. And so I would say integrity is constantly like a mirror that reflects who you are. The Word of God, I look at the Word of God. It mirrors, it reflects in me kind of the difference between how I'm living and how I'm not. My wife and I, a few weeks ago, were driving and we were going to go visit some people down south, family. And there's a neighbor who at times has been really, really difficult. And I tried to work with her. And as we were driving out, I noticed her to the left and I ignored her. We just drove by. I didn't even make eye contact with her. And it was like a mirror. It was so powerful. It was like, really? Mm-hmm. You're just going to drive by because of somebody who you don't think really supports or you don't get along with. Well, you're going to ignore her. And again, that's what reminds me. That's what tells me again is that that's not right. You know, I was ashamed. I wasn't like punishing myself, but I was like, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I have to walk that integrity. I have to face that part. Who knows what that person needs? I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things that person could be going through. I'm the one that's going to have the opportunity to reflect the things, the wisdom, the integrity, all the things that my life has, God has developed. That's the showcase.
Right.
And I let it pass by.
But those moments that happen for us, a lot of people want to hide those moments. They don't want to come on a podcast mm-hmm. and admit them. Mm-hmm. And I think those moments, as you're sharing with us, are really invitations to help us see in that mirror, right? It's like, oh, wow, I'm ugly.
Yeah.
I got some ugly I got to mm-hmm. deal with, you know? And being real about it is the beginning of dealing with the ugly. But if you just keep hiding it, which is what lack of integrity is just this sort of duplicity, this double life, this mm-hmm. hiding these secrets, this mm-hmm. kind of like, I say one thing and do another.
Exactly.
That never deals with the ugly in the mirror, right? Let's talk about groupthink. How often do we forsake integrity in small ways because everyone around us is doing it?
Yeah, I mean, everybody faces that, you know, peer pressure, whether it's at work, it can be at church, you know, unfortunately, you know, even at church, it can be a place where people, you know, don't want people to see what they're really, really like. Actually, the best place, it should be the best place where we can be exposed with that. And I think that all those moments that we struggle with, you know, letting ourselves be seen, you know, whether it's a church or work, to me, it's, again, it's like mindfulness. It's being in the present. You know, it's kind of like this proverb too, you know, which path are you going to take? There's a moment in there where you're faced with, okay, I'm afraid to be exposed. I'm afraid to be seen. I'm afraid to be vulnerable. To me, that's the point, is to address it and to say, because if you follow it out, it only gets more messy. But if you, at that moment, just say, the best thing I can do is be present and real with people and to let them see and experience what that's like. Because that's really where most people want to be. Nobody wants to live this, you know, fake or superficial or hidden life, mm-hmm. because it's a burden.
Right. So hypocrisy. One of the biggest complaints of non-Christians about Christians is that we're a bunch of hypocrites, which, you know, I would agree, but I would say all people are hypocrites. The definition of a hypocrite or hypocrisy, according to Webster's, is behavior that contradicts what one claims to believe or feel. How do you help people recognize hypocrisy in their own life? They come into your practice or whatever, and you can see there's a hypocrisy going on. What are some helpful questions to self-evaluate hypocrisy?
Well, for me, there's questions, but the reality is what are they hiding? Okay? That would be a question. What are you afraid people will see? What are you thinking that they will not like or not? Why won't they come close to you? Okay. I mean, if it's with husband and wife, you know, again, it's like, what are you afraid of that they will see? Will they reject you? Will they, you know, feel disappointed with you? So I guess for me, it's really, really important for them to understand what they don't like about themselves. So I do a lot of work with shame. You know, shame is a feeling. Like when I say I'm sorry, that's kind of more of a behavior, but shame is a feeling. We all carry shame. I think its roots are in our sin and the things in our life that we don't want other people to see. So to expose it, I might ask them, what would it be like if they actually saw what you were like? Mm-hmm. What if you could tell people what you don't really want? Like, or you don't want to be seen for? What if you could just expose it? What if they saw that? And so I don't know if that's making sense, but I really encourage them to think about who they see themselves as, how they see themselves, and what about that is so, you know, difficult for them to let others see.
Those are good questions. How do you think lack of integrity in Christians' lives deeply wound people's view of God? I mean, you were a pastor for 30 years. You had to have seen it over and over again and saw the damage.
No, it. I mean, it's always, you know, a battle for people. I mean, there's, you know, hypocrisy exists wherever we are. In the church, you know, people, you know, pointing the finger at someone else. I remember I was getting a haircut one time, and the lady didn't know I was a pastor, but she said, you know, I went to a church, and I started attending there, but I stopped going because when I would go out on the weekends and I go to these parties, everybody at that church was at the party. And I said to her, I said, but that's what church is for. It's not for perfect people. Mm-hmm. It's not for people who live things perfectly. It's a place to come and see who you are, to be reflected about who you are, and you get, and you're given the opportunity to live differently. You're given the opportunity to wipe away that old slate and walk in a new way. And so I always encourage people to understand, don't compare. I mean, to me, hypocrisy is comparison. You know, Look at them. Look at me. You know, I think when people see hypocrisy, they're probably at some level being exposed internally. You know, I'm like that. It's interesting how bitterness and resentment is a lot about what we see in other people that we don't like in ourselves. And so I see that is the beauty of exposing hypocrisy, is getting people to see about who they are and not pointing at someone else. I always believe biblically, you know, we're called alongside people. I mean, that's parakleo. Kleo means I call alongside. Pra is a preposition along. So I always believe that's what we're called alongside. That's a word that's used for compassion in the New Testament for God. Coming alongside people. That's kind of the antidote to me to hypocrisy. It's not pushing away, but coming close.
Interesting. Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick.
Yeah.
And I always kind of like in the church, we do that all the time. I used to be in college ministry and people would do the same thing. Like, you know, I don't want to come to this ministry and then see all these people at a Kager on the weekends. And I'm like, no, you should be glad that they're at church. Like the church should be more like a doctor's office.
Absolutely.
Where people can come because they're sick and they're bleeding and they're hurting and they're grieving and they're depressed and they need help. But what it tends to be is we walk in, and I liken it to like a waiting room, and we're looking over and some guy's got a cast on his leg and we're like, why are you here?
Yes.
You're hurt.
Yes.
Like we're surprised and shocked by hypocrisy and sin and brokenness and hurt and pain in the church. Well, then what's the church for? Because I'm pretty sure it's a waiting room to visit the surgeon.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, man. It was Jesus who said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. He seems to suggest our words have this power and they can either build trust or dismantle it. How important in relationships is our word?
Well, it's really important. I mean, I think even if you take the model of marriage, I mean, I think the two pillars are trust and commitment. Those are built on consistency. They're built on letting your yes be yes and your no be no. And I think even your words, again, it goes back to being able to be vulnerable with people. I think if you're able to say, maybe, okay, let's put it this way. If I said, yes, I will do this, and maybe I didn't do it. But if you're willing to come back and say, that was my bad. I made a mistake there. Either I missed the opportunity or I forgot, whatever it is. And so it's so important for repairs to happen. You know, there's always going to be, I mean, the point to me of let your yes be yes and no be no is that's what makes a good relationships. That's what makes healthy relationships. We're being told that because that's inherently not what we practice. I mean, we're being encouraged. That's what we should be doing. And so that just reminds me to be very in touch and honest with people about if I'm on time or if my yes is my yes, whatever that might be. But ultimately to also know if my words don't line up, I can also make a repair. I can always come back and do that. That's being yes too to me. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how I really look at that.
I like the idea of coming back and knowing we can always make a repair. I wonder what you think about the slow drip to a lack of integrity, meaning like I don't think we wake up, you know, overnight and we're embezzlers or we wake up and we're adulterers. It seems like we start sort of smudging the numbers. We start sort of the white lies. We, start flirting at work and calling it innocent. We start taking advantage of someone for our own gain and calling it just business. I mean, what does that kind of like slow drift all of a sudden? You have a double life, a life that lacks integrity. You are on a crooked path. Like, how do you get from those small things to your whole life lacks integrity?
Right. Well, it's also small steps off the center. So they're never usually big things. Mm-hmm. You know, generally people say, well, it just started very small.
Mm-hmm. You
know? It's like drug addiction. I just took one hit. But next time, it was just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And you get desensitized. Problem with the small rise up is that we get desensitized to what our faith or our core values are. And it's kind of like the old story about, you know, put the frog in warm water. If you slowly heat it up, he'll stay in there. And so it's always that slow, you know, taking just a glance over there, or like you said, it's not like a bunch of money or whatever, but it's taking a little bit at a time. And that's where we get desensitized. And then that becomes normal for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of think like, well, that's not that big a deal.
Right. That's so interesting to normalize small steps off center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. Mm-hmm. How do you see secrets and lack of integrity actually causing anxiety in people? Because that's the thing, is that whole like living a life you have to hide, that actually seems like it would cause more anxiety.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, really, anxiety, the base of anxiety is fear of uncertainty. It's things that I don't control. And I think a life that lacks integrity gets out of control. And sometimes mm-hmm. we go into a life without integrity because of uncertainty and fear about how am I going to pay my bills, or how am I going to, if I tell the truth, I could get fired. If I tell the truth, this may offend someone. There's always that uncertainty and that mm-hmm. fear of the outcome. And I always caution myself and other people is that, remember, the mind a lot of times when it looks at uncertainty and fear, it's going to go to the worst scenario. And make sure that when you look at that, you're not just driven by fear. So that if it calls for me to make a decision that may be questionable, I mean, that's the part of even trusting God beyond what I know or understand, is letting him deal with the uncertainty, not my wisdom or my limited human perspective to always guide me.
Or shady behavior and stepping off center to take care of myself.
Right, because that's because you're afraid. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's uncertain. So it's like letting God take care of that uncertainty and not trying to deal with it on your own.
Yeah. I had a relationship in a community several years ago where I was so frustrated because I could see this person's lack of integrity and how they were handling themselves in this community. And it was so, it was dirty.
Yeah.
Like, it was just wrong. And I felt so mad about it and frustrated. Yeah. I remember meeting with a mentor and just kind of expressing, like, I almost feel like, why does no one else see this? And it's so not okay. And I will never forget what she said. She said, the truth always rises to the surface.
Right.
And it was almost like she was inviting me to trust God for time and what would be revealed. And it makes me think about the passage in Luke where Jesus says, "For there's nothing hidden that will not be disclosed, and nothing concealed that will not be known or brought out into the open." And I'm just wondering how you see that as an encouragement instead of something to be afraid of. And even taking it back to your experience of feeling unjustified in this church firing you, there's some sort of invitation where God is saying, don't worry about trying to expose other people's wrongdoings. I've got this, because everything that's done in the secret, everything that's done in the dark will be exposed and brought out into the light. Just you watch. It's just that we don't want to watch and wait for God to do his thing. It seems like we want to expose it for ourselves, but then that causes us to go down ugly paths where we become, you know, terrible humans to expose other people's brokenness.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, how can this be an encouragement instead of something that we're afraid of?
Well, I always look at, like, whether rejection, firing, or whatever, it's no. And it isn't original with me, but no means new opportunities. Most of the time, when we get no or we face those kinds of things, we see them that it's an ending. And I always incorporate my faith, because God's always making things grow when they die. And so encouraging people to embrace that a little bit. It's difficult in the beginning, right? You know, prayer is asking God for what I cannot see. Prayer is asking God for what I don't believe is possible. It's not asking him. I don't think prayer is always dictating to him what we want, but it's trying to see what he can do with my circumstances. That's where no becomes the new opportunity. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a sense you could say for me, if I'd never got fired from the church, I wouldn't have a private practice, and I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't have pursued and got my license to be marriage and family therapist. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a new opportunity. And so, I mean, I love Paul's words in Ephesians, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that works within us." Able is the Greek word. I mean, the verb there is dunatai. It's where we get the word. The noun is like dunamis, but it's where we get dynamite. That word means something. The potential is beyond our understanding. I've told people before, whatever your circumstances, whatever you're facing, you're always packing godly dynamite. It can do what you can't imagine. As a child, my dad, my uncle decided to blow a stump up, so they decided to put some dynamite in there. Not sure exactly how much to put on there. You can imagine. So when it went off, it went out on the road, and they had to stop traffic because it went way beyond what they ever imagined. And that's what no, I think, we need to look at. Does no mean dunamis? Does it mean God is able? Is it where God's going to do something far more than I can imagine? Because it's his power, not mine.
Mm-hmm. This proverb is really promising that if we have integrity, we'll have security. And if we don't, we won't. And, you know, when Jesus says there's nothing hidden that will not be disclosed and nothing concealed that will not be known or brought out into the open, that can sound scary, but it also sounds like a promise. And I'm wondering, for those listening who maybe are afraid because they have something that they're hiding, mm-hmm. something that they're worried will be found out, is it better to be found out or to confess?
I don't know. I kind of see them as the same. Maybe, you know, I mean,
you do.
To confess is to be found out.
Right. But to be found out without confession means you got caught red-handed.
Okay, yeah. So, but it's always, I agree, it's always best to let people see your true colors, to see what you are. It's mm-hmm. never good to hide it. Mm-hmm. It's never freeing. You know, it's like packing a ball and chain around. It goes with you everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, even as the proverb said, if we stay off the path, it doesn't say, the proverb doesn't tell us how that happens. It's ultimately saying, if you're not living a whole, complete, committed life, and really the assumption would be committed life to God, that somehow in some way, it's always going to be exposed and it's going to come out. So it's always better to do that up front, because that's where the healing begins. That's the freeing part of it, is I don't have to cower anymore. I don't have to be something that I'm not, because that's where the anxiety, that's where all the frustration and the hurt comes from.
Mm-hmm. That's why I love James 5:16. It says, therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. It seems like there's great power in confessing it, in naming it. Whatever it is that's hidden, whatever it is that's dark, there's a sense that, you know, it sounds scary to bring it out into the light, but it's like if a surgeon saw something inside of us that was infecting our body, or some piece of cancer, a tumor, he would, in a sense, invite, yes. like want to go in and yep. get it out.
Yep.
And that feels kind of like the invitation in the proverb is like, whatever you got going on in there that you're yes. trying to hide is causing you to walk a crooked path. Like, let's get it out of your life and get you back on the path that you're supposed to be on.
Yes.
Well, Dick, I appreciate this conversation and even just talking on the topic of integrity. I feel like we're all tempted to, I really like your verbiage, small step off center. I think we're tempted to yeah. take a small step off center all day, every day. And if we can figure out how to keep walking center, yes. we're promised good things. And yes. I love that. Thank you for sharing your story mm-hmm. and your wisdom, and for opening yourself up and showing us a part of you that maybe was even hard to share. You're practicing what you're preaching right now, Pastor Dick.
Yeah. yeah.
And for those of you guys who are listening, thank you for being with us. Continue to walk that center line and you will feel secure. If you want to hear more about what's going on with Collide, check us out at wecollide.net, and we'll catch you next week.